Welcome to Murder with the Misses. I'm Darren.
And I'm Amy. And today we're going to tell you the story of Josh and Amber Hilberling. We're back in Oklahoma for this one. This is another one that got national coverage, so many people may remember this one. And it's a twofer for true crime. There's two mysteries in one story. We're talking about 23-year-old Josh. He graduated from Victory Christian High School in 2007. He liked sports and video games. He was about anywhere between 6'4 and 6'6, depending on what story you're reading. And he weighed about 200 to 220, so he was a big dude. In early 2008, he went to a Halloween party and met Amber Fields. Amber's around 5'5" tall. She played soccer, ran track, played volleyball, and was in FFA. They did not hit it off, but they did run into each other again in 2010, and things were different. The connection this time was instant. So instant that they got married in August of 2010. He was in the Air Force and was going to be stationed in Alaska, so they married quick so that she could stay on base with him. Alaska wasn't the best for her, though. She was spoiled. Her mom was a nurse and her stepdad was a plastic surgeon, so she was accustomed to a certain lifestyle and getting her way. But while Josh was off doing his Air Force stuff, she was home alone. Then she got pregnant, so her homesickness got even worse.
They had a bad relationship. It was not a fairy tale like she had hoped.
No, it was very toxic. Now, Josh's Air Force files show an incident where he threw a plate at Amber and tried to pop her breast implant. Amber said he would break her phone so she couldn't talk to anyone if he wasn't home. Josh once told his dad that Amber pushed him down the stairs into the basement. He ended up being discharged from the Air Force about 8 months or so in, and Amber said it was due to drug-related issues. But they had to come back to Tulsa. They were waiting for a house to be finished, so they stayed with her mom, stepdad, her siblings, and her step-siblings. Sometime around May of 2011, there was an incident where Amber pushed Josh and hit him in the head with a lamp, causing him to have to get stitches and staples, and some reports say it was about 21 stitches. Yikes. He filed for a protective order, and her mom said that when the sheriff came to the house to serve that order, Josh and Amber laughed about it. Neither of them showed up to court, so that order was dismissed. A couple of weeks later, they said that Josh was caught doing drugs, and her mom kicked him out of the house. Both of them. Amber's stepdad, the plastic surgeon, kept an apartment for out-of-town patients to stay in when he worked on them. This was at the University Club Towers, and that is where Amber and Josh moved to.
This apartment complex is a 32-story cylindrical tower, so it's actually a round building that was built around 1966.
Yeah, so it sticks out in the skyline if you're looking at pictures of Tulsa because it's just a big, tall, round building, like the whole building is round. And the first 8 stories of this building is a parking garage. So while they were on the 25th story of the building, they were technically only on the 17th floor. So I hope that makes sense. And this is where they were when the incident happened on June 7th of 2011. They had been here for about 2 weeks at this point. Amber is 19 years old and 7.5 months pregnant with their son, Levi. They were fighting, talking about divorce, and Josh packed his bags. She said they were arguing about her dad's wedding. He said he wasn't going because he was going to a concert in Tennessee with some friends. She said he wasn't going because he wanted to go sell pills, in reality. He called his dad for a ride, but his dad said he couldn't come get him until after work. He told his dad that he couldn't get Amber to stop doing drugs even though she was pregnant, and he was going to divorce her and try to get custody of the baby. What they were fighting about that day is up in the air. During this fight, Amber said that Josh had thrown a laundry basket and cracked a window. She called the building manager, and two men, who just happened to be there working on another apartment, came up to fix the window. One of them went downstairs to the work truck to get some tools, and the other was out on the balcony measuring. Next thing you know, the window breaks, Amber screams, and Josh is falling, landing on top of the parking garage. Amber rushes to the elevator and takes it down to his body.
When the paramedics arrive, she tells them multiple times that she pushed him out the window.
Yes, she's always said that she did push him She didn't intentionally push him out the window, but she did push him and he went out the window. Yeah. Police took her down to the station and put her in an interview room so they could get her side of the story. Her grandmother was in there with her. The detective was in the next room. And once he hears what the women were talking about, he turned on the camera in the room that they were in to record their conversation. You can watch this whole thing online. It's about 2 hours long. But she says a lot of things. She blames her mom for putting him in that apartment. She kept saying she was a horrible person. Who could do that? Push my husband and make him fall out a window. And her grandma keeps telling her to stop saying that. Don't say that in front of the police. And to get a lawyer. But she also says that Josh's parents kept saying that if they stayed together, Amber was going to kill him. And when telling her grandma what happened, she said that she was in the bathroom crying and throwing up. Josh came in and said that they had options, asking her what she wanted to do. He said he wanted to work things out, but they needed to be separated for a while. He was waiting for his dad to pick him up. The man on the balcony measuring the damaged window was still on the balcony when Josh went out. She said that Josh was messing with the TV and she just pushed him and he went out the window. And we actually have a clip of that audio because I'll say this. I have researched this thing and looked at so many different things and I do not see a lot of people mention that she actually admits this on this video. And so we wanted to be the ones to play it because to me, this is important.
Yeah. Well, here, I'll play it.
She fixing to... Where was the candle things?
There's like these big... There's like these stand-up candle things like this high. They're just like little wire things. But he was fixing the TV. He was like messing with the TV right here. And the window's right here. And I pushed him and he fell out the window. And fell. Oh, God. I'm never going to get over this. I'm never going to understand it. I mean, I thought divorce was going to hurt.
Yeah, and this is when the cops switch gears and, you know, from an accident to a murder.
Right, because they knew, she had, like we said, she had told the paramedics several times when they got there that she'd pushed him. So they knew that she pushed him. But at this point, when she's in the room with her grandma, she's not a suspect or under interrogation. They're literally just sitting in a room so they can get her story. And then she starts spewing all this stuff out, thinking that they're not being recorded or videoed or anything like that because there's not a cop with them. And she just starts saying all kinds of things. She was arrested and bonded out on a $250,000 bond. She gave birth to Levi in August. And that bond would be revoked just 6 months later when she failed 2 drug tests and failed to charge her ankle monitor more than 10 times. They offered her a plea deal where she would serve 5 years in jail, but she refused that offer and went to trial. She had an expert come in and look at the window in the apartment. At the time of the incident, it was 46 years old. The window looked like it was original to the building, so it had never been replaced. The glass was not safety glass, and would have deteriorated over the years, making it easier to break. Now, she also has stated that this window would kind of move around in the frame and that air would leak in when it was windy outside because we get a lot of wind here. And so it was not sealed. It was not safe. It was not up to code is what she was saying. She said that she pushed him off of her and he fell through the window on accident by tripping over his own big feet. But a neighbor downstairs said he heard Amber scream, no, 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 then heard running noises, like from where their front door would be to the side of the apartment where the window was, and then glass shattering. Now, she had said that it was like the glass wasn't even there, that it was flimsy, and sounded like a small glass bowl breaking, which, if true, would mean that someone downstairs wouldn't have necessarily heard that.
Yeah, and Amber tried to recreate, you know, the incident on a deputy in court, and she pushed him. And he barely moved.
Yeah, they said she was very weak. They expected her to be. And so I don't know if she was playing that up to be like, you know, see, I couldn't have done that much damage. Or if she really just was that weak, which would either way mean that something wasn't right. It just wasn't adding up. And she had told everybody in court, she's told Dr. Phil, she's told everybody who will listen since then, that he was coming at her and went to put his hands on her, and she pushed him to get him away from her. But please keep in mind that portion of the 911 tape we just played where she said he was messing with the TV, which would have put him sideways or facing away, not like coming at her. So it's two conflicting stories for me. So the theory that she had actually run to push him was the more likely scenario. Her mom said that the trial was more like a modern-day Tulsa witch trial, and it was made out to be like the rich bitch kills the military hero. But we've heard the video. I don't think anybody's making her out to be a bad guy. I think it's just what it looks like. And she had no mention in that video of him grabbing her or coming at her. He was just fixing the TV. It was argued as well that this video should not be admissible to court because she had not been Mirandized at this point. But the court allowed it because you Mirandize someone when they're under arrest. She was not under arrest at this time, and she made the statements voluntarily, out loud, in a police station. I expect to have zero privacy if I'm in a police station. I expect there to be more cameras there than anywhere else I've ever been. Then there was the prosecution also stating that there was no sign of a struggle, and there wasn't. We've seen pictures of this crime scene. Everything is in place. Nothing was knocked over, not even the candle things that were in between the TV and the window. And then there was the autopsy report. It was as expected for the most part, sadly. The medical examiner said that he had broken bones in both arms, both legs. Most of his ribs were broken, along with his sternum, pelvis, and neck. Internally, he had bruised lungs, a lacerated liver, and spleen, along with injured kidneys. They could not tell if he fell facing forward or backwards, but some witnesses said he was facing forward when he went out the window, which would also indicate he was not facing Amber when pushed.
And the autopsy also showed that he had no drugs in his system.
Right, her whole storyline this whole time has been that he is this big bad drug user and drug seller. But his autopsy showed he had no drugs.
But yes, she gets busted 6 months.
Yeah, she failed two UAs within that six months. Yeah. And that's right after having a baby, being on it. You have an ankle monitor on, you're awaiting trial for murder, and you're still out doing drugs.
Yeah, they supposedly got kicked out of the house because of him doing drugs.
Mm-hmm, out of her mom's. Mm-hmm.
Out of her mom's and everything. So, I mean, whose drugs did they actually find?
Right. I'm not saying he didn't have a drug problem at some point, maybe. They did say he had a problem, but when he went to boot camp, he cleaned up, and then he relapsed, like fell back. But
yeah, but I mean, look at the time frame.
Exactly.
So, I mean, the time frame from when they got kicked out of the house because of drugs to when he died.
2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Still in 2 weeks, drugs are going to show up in your system.
If they're doing an autopsy, they're checking your hair, they're checking your blood, they're checking your everything. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. He had no drugs in his system.
Correct.
Which means?
He had no drugs in his system.
Yep.
Yep. We see it.
Yeah.
Her defense attorney had never prosecuted a criminal case before, but he was a family friend, so he's the one that they hired. And even during the trial, her parents tried to get her to fire him, but she said she didn't have the heart to do that. In April 2013, she was convicted of second-degree murder and sentenced to 25 years in prison. And on a side note, that lawyer has since been disbarred for accepting gifts. And when I say gifts, hundreds of thousands of dollars to buy a house. Those kinds of gifts. He got in trouble for allowing a minor to drink alcohol and making sexual advances on the 16-year-old while she was asleep, and obstructing an officer and having physical control of a vehicle while intoxicated. So that gave her grounds for a good appeal for not having good counsel. And she did appeal, but she used a different attorney, of course, who actually represented her pro bono. But the court upheld the verdict. It didn't change the circumstances of what happened. And like I said, she did several interviews, including Dr. Phil. She was featured on the show Lock Up when it did some episodes in the Tulsa County Jail. In 2016, she filmed her story for a two-part documentary called Women Who Kill. And because of all this publicity, she was generally hated by a lot of other inmates. But those close to her said that she was a great person. She even said in this documentary footage that she had found a new partner who she loved dearly. But she had also had several infractions while locked up. In 2013, she had been in trouble for possession of unauthorized identification. In 2014, there were several instances, one for indecent exposure. She failed a UA for having meth in her system. She used abusive, obscene language towards staff. She was in unauthorized areas several times. And she failed to obey verbal orders several times. She had more of the same in 2015. And in 2016, in January, she got in trouble for failing a UA for having marijuana in her system. And also for getting into a fight with another inmate.
And Amber's parents, you know, have custody of Levi, and they would bring him to see her in prison regularly. He thought that she was living in a castle, so he thought it was, you know, beautiful that she needed all the guards to protect her.
Yeah, he said that she was so beautiful that she needed the guards to protect her from people. Which, I mean, whatever you need to get through it with your kids. He was very young at that point, so they had to tell him something, and who wants to tell the kid the truth at that age? He needs to be old enough to understand. On October 24th of 2016, at around 5:33 p.m., Amber was found by a fellow inmate hanging in her cell with a straightener cord wrapped around her neck. Apparently, if you're a level 4, you're allowed to buy things like that in the commissary. Amber's mom said that the prison officials were calling her and her husband's work phone numbers to notify them of the death instead of their cell phones. And their cell phones were the numbers that were listed on the emergency contact information for Amber. So when they saw missed calls from the prison, they called back, got transferred a lot, all the fun stuff of dealing with the prison system. And finally she was told, she's dead. Like, that's literally what they said. When her mom asked what happened, she said they told her to watch the news if they wanted more information. So this is the second mystery for this case. Her family believes that she was murdered. She had just been talking to Levi the night before on the phone about Halloween costumes, and she was in really good spirits. The cameras in her area that would have shown anything suspicious weren't working that day. Her autopsy showed that she had meth in her system. She had scratch marks on the left side of her neck, abrasions on the right side, and a red-purple bruise on the right side of her jaw. Fellow inmates would say that the guards would joke around, making comments about Josh if Amber was ever around a window. Other inmates also said that they had witnessed Amber being forced to wear a dog muzzle when out in the yard. She had written a letter dated the day before she was found that was to a local news station who had been trying to get her to do an interview. And her letter said, "I'm writing to do an interview, despite my honest reservations, because I can't let go of the hope that using my own voice in conversations about my own life will be the one and only chance I have to change the circumstances of my own reality." It was obviously delivered after her death, so it made big news.
Yeah, when the news came out about Amber's death, Josh's brother posted on Facebook, "Ding dong, the witch is dead."
He did. That family has been through it, because either way, they lost a family member, they lost a loved one. And whether it was intentional or not, her actions is what did it. So they don't want to do the forgiveness route. They know.
But, I mean, you know, this is the whole thing. I mean, back to the drugs on this. This is so many, you know, times. She failed so many UAs.
Yeah.
At what point does the mom say,
maybe you have a problem?
Maybe you was the problem?
Yeah. Well, I mean, her mom has come out and talked about everything else but drug use. She said that she was spoiled. She said that she had anger issues and all kinds of things. And she said, you know, it's hard to say because her family says that Josh was the abuser. Josh's family says that Amber was the abuser. And I just don't know. It was probably both ways. That's why I called it a toxic relationship, because they were both probably doing it. But why not go ahead and just admit to the drug use too? It's right there. It's in writing. It's documented for years.
Yeah, but what I'm getting at is that, you know, like I said, his autopsy came back. He'd been clean.
Yep.
Drugs stay in your system for a while. You can test and see how much time has passed with drug use.
Right. It diminishes over time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And You know, but what hadn't changed is that she has continued to do drugs.
Correct.
But yet everybody wants to say that he did them.
Yes. And you know why. And it's because she's the only one there to tell the story.
Yeah.
And so it's her narrative. And we can see, looking through this, she was one of those spoiled kids who always got her way, and everybody else was the problem. Even in that audio, and that, well, it's a video online of her in the room with her grandma, she blames her mom for putting them in the apartment. Well, get your own damn apartment. You're grown. You're married. You have a kid coming. Do it yourself.
I mean, you know, that's what I'm saying, despite the fact that, you know, so many years in or whatever, she's still pissing
hot
on UA.
Yep.
In prison.
Yeah. Yep. 100%. Whatever version of events of these two instances that you want to believe is up to debate. It's a high debate that's always been a debate as to what exactly went on that day and as to what exactly went on the day Amber died. But there was a message posted on her memory page on Facebook in September of 2018, and I'll read it. Oklahoma Department of Corrections and Mabel Bassett Correctional Center are responsible for covering up the murder of Amber Hilberling and making it look like a suicide. Amber Hilberling was murdered by an inmate named Patricia Rucker, or T. Rucker. Hours before Amber was found hanging in her cell, Rucker, who was doing a life sentence, told Amber to go kill herself. Rucker was housed in a separate block than Amber and was not allowed in her pod. However, the guards allowed it anyway. Rucker is in prison for strangling her girlfriend over 20 years ago. Amber was found hanging by the cord of her hair straightener. Her body wasn't removed from her cell for hours. She was left there for so long so that the prison's internal affairs department could get to the murder scene before the medical examiner. There were claw marks on Amber's neck where she tried to fight off her attacker and remove the cord. Amber was working with Dr. Phil and had an interview coming up with the local news station KJRH. The prison did not want the world to know an inmate killed another inmate, and they let it happen and did nothing about it. Since Amber's case was so high profile, they had to cover up what they let happen. The warden of the prison and several guards ate McDonald's and laughed about her murder, all while Amber's body was still hanging. It doesn't matter if you believe Amber deserved to be in prison or not. Her 7-year-old son deserves to know his mommy didn't choose to leave him. Her life was taken from her, and I will spend my life trying to prove it. So there's our corruption for the story. If people believe that stuff like this doesn't happen in real life, you're in a different world than we are. This happens. All of this happens in real life.
You know, some people, you know, they see prison as a place where, you know, people get, you know, 3 hots in a cot and just enjoying their days until their time's up. If you think there are only bad cops on the outside, you're sadly mistaken.
Yeah, they're everywhere.
Because we've talked about the system of prison systems and everything being just totally screwed.
Very, very. And if any of this letter is true,
yeah,
holy shit.
Because, I mean, honestly, if they was doing their job, no drugs would have been getting in there.
Well, that's, yeah, they all prisons have a problem with that.
But that's what I'm saying. If they was doing their jobs, they actually wouldn't be.
If they were doing their jobs, people wouldn't just be dying all the time.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of stories. If you look into prison deaths, there's a lot of times that people have been written up as suicide when they're covered in bruises from head to toe.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, it's just, it happens, people. It happens. And I'm assuming that the person who wrote this post and put it on Facebook on her memory page was possibly an inmate that was close to her or at least there, because the prison officials had told her parents that she was found and they cut her down or took her down and did CPR on her for 15 minutes until she was declared dead. But according to this letter, she hung there for hours. Mm-hmm. And I know this happened like just before 6 o'clock, and her parents weren't notified until sometime around midnight is when they finally started getting calls for the death notification. So there is a 6-hour window in there where who knows what was going on in there. And I'm going to get on my soapbox for a second, because another thing that people don't talk about is domestic violence against males. One in nine men experience severe intimate partner physical violence, intimate partner contact sexual violence, and or intimate partner stalking, according to the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence. Many people believe that what happened to Josh was an accident, and many believe that this was deliberate. It is not okay, regardless of gender, for any domestic violence. But men are tough guys who are supposed to be able to take it. I don't think that means taking a lamp to the head. It sounds like they both had documented cases against each other, and now they've both lost their lives because of it. Neither deserved it, and they left their son behind. And it's just so sad.
Yeah.
But her parents do have custody of Levi, and so they are the ones that are raising him. I did not see anything that said whether or not Josh's family was allowed to have visitation, but he was very close to his dad and his family, so I'm pretty sure that they at least have visitation because they seem like the kind that would really fight for it.
Yeah.
Because they are the only ones who were there to fight for him during her trial. It was a bad deal. And if you or someone you love needs help, please call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 800-799-7233 or text the word START to 88788.
All right, well, that's it for this one. Catch you guys on the next one.
Another wonderful one. Bye.